Now, as we move towards the end of the program, a little more history very close to home here at the ABC, a celebration of the war correspondents who told the stories of the 500,000 Australians involved in defending Australia during World War II. These stories are assembled in a book out this week, Voices from the Air, compiled by a man who did his own time as a foreign correspondent, Tony Hill, now managing editor of ABC News 24. He focuses on 13 war correspondents and technicians who reported from the absolute front line, why it was a coming of age for the young ABC, and why things have changed so much. People like the legendary Chester Wilmot reporting here from Tobruk.
There go the guns on the north shore. Sharp spurts of flame shoot into the sky, and then high up above us we see the pinpoint bursts of bursting shells. Searchlight picks up a cloud way over on the north. It's the only searchlight going at the moment, and now the AK guns right behind us stop up with their sharp metallic clatter. The searchlights are still searching for the plane, but it's bright moonlight and they haven't got much chance of picking him out. His drone goes louder. Here come the bombs now. Listen to them. They've fallen in the harbour. In the harbour.
Gosh, that's beautiful scripting there. I mean, there wasn't even a role called broadcast journalist equipped for war coverage at the start of the conflict. So a lot has evolved, hasn't it, between those times and those men compared to the modern-day reporter dressed in flak jackets doing life crosses into the news. Tony Hill, welcome this morning.
Hello, Geraldine. How are you?
Good, thank you. Now, who were these men? They were all men too.
They were, because at that time there were no women accredited by the ABC to report from the front lines. They were a real mixed bag. They were a mix of broadcasters and newspaper journalists. Some were adventurers, some were quieter types, one was a poet. They were a real mixed bag of people. But the one thing they had in common was overwhelmingly they came to this role with very little experience in being in the field, and in fact, all of them, no experience broadcasting from the front lines of a war.
And it really brought radio, did it not, into the lives of many Australians. That really occurred during the time of the war.
It did, and keep in mind that the First World War was a newspaper war. The Second World War was also a radio war. Radio was now a present part of people's lives. And to have these people on the front line be able to bring the sounds of battle, the sounds of war and gunfire, interviews with the soldiers and the reports from the war correspondents from the front lines into people's homes back in Australia had huge impact. It really did. Much more so than the printed word could do from newspapers.
I think you said something like there were a million radio licences or something came out, taken out in the first few years of the war, and there had been none before that.
Well, I mean, it was by the time the war came around, 1941, the population of 7 million in Australia, there was something like about 1.3 million radio licences. So you can see what a huge spread of availability there was, and it was growing very, very quickly.
Look, I saw a documentary recently from Jonathan Dimbleby about the BBC, which of course was older than the ABC, didn't even have a news department until 1947, and he said that it was really rehearsing, the BBC rehearsing for the D-Day, covering the rehearsals for D-Day, that actually gained the trust of people of power and the community, that it embedded itself into the national consciousness. In a way, I think you're saying the same thing in this book.
Well, exactly the same thing. I think that the ABC was building up a news service just before the war, and then through the war, that expanded quite significantly. 2 years after the war, as you say, there was the formal establishment of an ABC news service, but it was the ABC's coverage of the war during those critical years that did gain the public trust. There was a move during the war for the Department of Information, for example, to take control of the primetime 7 p.m. News bulletin on radio. It only lasted a few months. The public hated the fact that the government was trying to control the information, and they were forced to hand back control of that to the ABC. So the work of the ABC in providing the news coverage during the war, and in part also the work of these war correspondents, undeniably contributed to the fact that we now have a strong ABC news service today.
Tragically, a lot of them died young, both in service and out of it too. I was quite struck by that.
Look, it was a really tough and dangerous job. They were right on the front lines with the troops. In fact, their access to the battlefield was extraordinary by the standards of today. Yes, they were controlled very, very strongly in some ways by the military. Yes, they had to work within the limits of censorship. But their access to the troops on the front line was quite remarkable. John Elliott was the first ABC reporter fighter to die in the field. He was killed near the end of the war in 1945 on Balikpapan. Others suffered a number of injuries. One was badly burnt in a plane crash in Port Moresby, yet he was back in the field 6 months later. Another one, Dudley Leggett, contracted meningitis during his time in New Guinea and died 4 years after the war. There was a lot of casualties in one way or another amongst these
people. And Chester Wilmot himself, who became a very big BBC war correspondent, didn't he?
He did. And Wilmot himself, he died in the 50s, around 1954, I think, in a plane crash. But Wilmot himself, he was the first war correspondent.
Only 44, though, or something.
He was very young. He was very young. You know, and I think it's a great tragedy. I think undeniably the fact of the war was the defining event for these men's lives. And I think for many of them, it had a huge impact on their health and it shortened their lives, undeniably.
Now, you actually met a lot of the families of people and you fished out material that hasn't been heard since World War II, you say, in some cases. The families, so they actually had children who have kept up with the stories of their grandfathers, I suppose they are now.
There are children and grandchildren, and they've been immensely helpful in telling these stories. And I think that's why I hope the book is a bit more personal than a normal history. It's really the lives of these extraordinary men on the front lines, struggling with the equipment they took with them to record the sounds of battle and their reports to bring the news back to Australia. And I think, from my point of view, it's a collection of very personal histories of this group of men. And I hope that people enjoy it. And I think the families certainly found that, in some ways for them, it was quite illuminating too, finding out more about their own fathers and grandfathers.
Well, well done, Tony. Thank you very much for being with us. And one of those reporters is John Hind, which many of you may remember, his wonderful coverage of film, of cinema. And boy, I tell you what, the stories of him in this book are quite incredible. Tony Hill, and the book is Voices from the Air, published by ABC Books, an imprint of HarperCollins.